Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode today that I hope provides a snapshot that's relevant on multiple levels. This weekend marks the anniversary of the start of the Korean War. It began June 25th, 1950, shortly after an 18-year-old named Roland Dorfer had enlisted in the Navy to pursue his photographic dreams. You can find some photos of Roland Dorfer then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you'll also find a short video of Roland and his wife Judy inside the museum they've given new life to at VFW Post 10147 in Apopka, Florida. Perhaps it's no coincidence that the first four letters of his last name are D-O-E-R, because Roland is a doer. Every VFW or American Legion post around our country has a few of those, the men and women who show up and do the work without caring who gets the credit. There is, though, at least one thing he couldn't do when the Korean War broke out 72 years ago. This teenage sailor had never learned to swim.
Well, yes. I didn't even consider when I joined the fact that that I didn't know how to swim. This was in spite of the fact that my dad was a great swimmer, good diver. Trouble is, the only time he did it is when he could go to the swimming pool and show off for the ladies. He never once took me to the pool, and so I never did learn. And I got in the Navy, and, well, you know, you have to go through these various bits. And I was in there a couple of weeks, and I caught chicken pox, even though I'd had them once already as a kid. Well, during that time I was in infirmary, they had swimming classes, and I never did qualify. When I got out, they just pushed me on through the rest of the training program. I still don't know how to swim appreciably. Still can't do the backstroke.
You're not the first Navy veteran to tell me that he couldn't swim. I've had other guys say they worked it out where other guys took the test for him somehow and got them through. But you spent a lot of time, as you said, on an Admiral's flagship. So you're out on open water in situations where you might have needed to swim. But you mentioned, you know, the reason you went in the Navy was so you could learn photography and pursue that. And you actually did get to go to photography school.
That's what I served my 3 years doing. But back to the concept of swimming, on my first assignment to Africa as a new photographer, the Admiral was invited by President Truman, not invited, he was ordered by President Truman to represent the country at this dictator's re-inauguration in Liberia, West Africa. So no one else wanted to go. Shoot. This Northwest Kansas boy, I'll go, you know. So I got on there, and for the third day out, we hit Hurricane Hazel. I still remember it. And we didn't go into the heart of it, but we were close enough that ships would disappear behind waves, you know, and the wind blew and the ship. I never once got seasick. But that fact that I didn't know how to swim didn't matter. There were lifeboats over there, you know. Never bothered me.
And did you get to photograph that inauguration in Liberia?
Yes, I did. I didn't keep any pictures of it because it was all military property, you know, even though I did cumshaw some here and there, but I've lost those since then. But there I had my incident of hitchhiking my way out of the interior of Liberia because the Admiral went with the President to the interior. Their main income was an iron mine. And so he went back, and so I went, hopped on the train to go back with him, and somehow got separated, and the train came back without me. So there I was, 20 miles in the interior, having been warned that you don't be out after dark in that country, even in the city, let alone in the country. So, but anyway, a lumber truck came by, and another New York Times reporter and I hitchhiked the road way back. But, there were some great experiences. I loved being in Europe. One of my most memorable experiences. Of course, I talk about experiences that don't involve being shot at, you know. A lot of guys around here wish maybe theirs was that way, but when I was in Rome, once again, I went out on my own. I seem to do that frequently. And walking down this street, these long flight of stairs, I think there's a name for them, I forgot what it was.
The Spanish steps,
yeah. So I went up those and got to the top and stepped out into this small plaza. There was this little church over here on the side, and I was fascinated by churches. I'd seen St. Peter's and St. Paul's, you know, all those big ones. Here was this little one over here. So I'm going to check that out. So I sauntered over, walked into this dimly lit place, and looked to the left, and here was the statue of Moses by Michelangelo. Fascinated. Nothing really caught me like that. You look at the detail on that statue, the veins in the arms, the eyes, everything about it. And the toes were worn smooth from people kissing it over the centuries. In fact, they had a little place there so you can't do it anymore. That cruise, or those two cruises to Europe, really meant a lot to me.
What was the ship you were on, and who was the admiral? Or were there multiple?
Oh, it was multiple ships. On that particular cruise, after the inauguration, the officers went to France and sent us to Europe, or to Italy, to wait for the next ship back. Well, the next one coming back was 30 days away. So essentially, we got 30 days leave. The first class yeoman in charge tore up the papers, so they didn't even count against us. So we spent a month in Europe on open liberty. And that's when I went up there to that particular time. And then the trips to the Caribbean were nice, too. One of the most beautiful countries I've been to was Cuba. Went there before Castro, and it was a beautiful country, beautiful people. So that was another great experience.
And as far as the photography component of all this, what kinds of things were you typically photographing? What was the purpose behind it?
One of my assignments in the Caribbean, we were on the way to Vieques, which is a bombing range that we used off Cuba at one time. And somehow the word came down that they, for public relations purposes, they wanted some pictures of sailors on liberty. Well, there was a group going to Panama, so I said, all right, this is an opportunity. So I and a fellow photographer, well, he wasn't even a photographer, he was a yeoman, actually, went with this group to Panama, took pictures of these people, these guys on liberty, you know, just, that was one of my assignments. Another assignment was to go up to the North Sea on a supply ship to, in the June of 1952, to resupply our radar base in Labrador, because in wintertime you can't get in there. So that was an assignment I was put on specifically to view that operation, to take pictures of it and document it.
And then what would happen with the photographs that you snapped?
I have no idea. I would turn them in. They're supposedly used for public relations, but I took them, put them on file, and after that, I had no idea.
I mean, it could be that your family back home in Kansas is looking at the newspaper you used to deliver, and up pops one of those photos you took, huh?
That would be a surprise. It's very possible. Anything's possible, I guess.
And this may sound like a weird rabbit hole to go down, but photography has changed so much in those 70 years. For people that are used to just pulling out their phone and click, 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 click right now, what would you have to do, start to finish, in that photographic process? If you have an assignment, what would you have to do from start to completion of that assignment to make sure you got it right?
There's a picture over here that I could show you. First of all, is to take it in and develop the film. And we had these slide cartridges that you take out, go into the dark room, and then we'd have to print them. And this is what I'm doing here. I'm printing the picture, enlarging it, and then take it and file it. I identify it and file it, and if anyone wanted to see it particularly, then I made sure they saw it. Otherwise, it'd just go in a file.
And I'm sure that process always worked exactly as you wanted it to, right?
I wish. No, it wasn't always. Sometimes it was a trial and error thing for me, which is a lot of things I've done in my life has been just that. Of course, nowadays this you don't have any of that. I mean, it's you have all of these sophisticated small cameras you can carry around, and I'm sure the guys that used to use those Spade graphics, they probably don't even have dark rooms on the ships anymore.
And you had a dark room right on your ship?
Actually, yes. Actually, we had six photographers, and all of us slept in the photo lab. We had bunks on the wall. We lived and worked in the photo lab.
What kinds of things did you learn to do to be efficient with your film? Because I'm sure there was at least a consideration of not wasting film, because there was not an unlimited supply like we have with these digital devices today.
I didn't know there was an unlimited supply. There always seemed to be paper there. I didn't worry about that. And I must admit, I wasted a fair amount in trial and error. And I did print some for myself, but somehow they all disappeared. But no, I didn't worry about it so much.
And, you know, you mentioned Hurricane Hazel, and you, again, described it like no big deal. But if I try to put myself in your shoes, a young man, fairly new in the Navy, doesn't know how to swim, and I'm sure your ship wasn't just going straight. You must have had a little bit of rolling going on.
It was not going. It was going up and down. It was swaying sideways one way and then the other way. And, well, I don't have the other one shows what my battle station was, which was on the flag bridge. So when you're up that high, you're going a lot further than anyone else, up and down, forward and back. But, no, I just, that was an exhilarating experience.
I don't know if exhilarating was the word I expected there. I was thinking more harrowing or...
I teased my fellow Marines here, and I could say this, and none of them are around. A lot of people got sick in the storms or even in a normal cruise, and I always kid you, if a Navy guy got sick, you were out of luck. If there was a Marine battalion aboard, they were all lining the rails. No, I never did get seasick.
Well, you're here in Greater Orlando. I think we've stumbled upon an idea for the next thrill ride at one of these theme parks here. Just get up on the mast of a ship and let it go back and forth in a hurricane, huh?
Something, wouldn't it? Wow, never thought of that. Yeah.
Were there some other situations that challenged you during your time in the Navy that were kind of difficult to endure? Or you look back with that thought of, boy, I'm glad I handled that the way I did, or I got through that?
I guess it's hard to reflect on some of those things because, except the ones that I've described, I didn't really carry much imprint of feelings about it. I guess I'm just too matter-of-fact a person, you know. Things happen, and that's supposed to happen. It did. Here I am, you know. What's next? I guess that's my makeup in general. And I think that comes from my childhood to the point that I really didn't need to be disciplined very often. I was always considerate for the most part, except in some romantic instances. I don't know, I don't get emotionally immersed in much of occupational things, even like the work around here, you know, the things that I and Judy have done. It's great, you know, it isn't anything I want to brag about, but It feels good, and it's done. What's next?
Well, what's next for us is a short commercial break, but on the other side of that, more perspective from this 90-year-old Navy veteran who continues to use his time, talents, and treasure to bless his fellow vets. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. I always love hearing from listeners, and so many of you tell me you listen to Hometown Heroes while you're on the road. Nobody spends more time on the road than our friends in the trucking business. And if that's your business, I'm sure you know about Central Valley Trailer Repair. If you don't, you really should. Conveniently located near California's major transportation arteries, CVTR has stockpiles of parts waiting for you in Fresno and in Stockton, with experienced service technicians ready to handle even the most difficult of repairs. Central Valley Trailer Repair is an authorized Great Dane sales, parts, and service center, and you can always find a huge inventory of new and used semi-trailers for sale too. Dry freight, refrigerated, flatbed, whatever you're looking for, CVTR has you covered. How about 24-hour emergency service? You bet. What can't CVTR help you with? That's a question I can't answer, so you'll have to ask them yourself at 1-800-877-8444. That's 1-800-877-8444. The website? That's simple. CVTR.com. For Central Valley Trailer Repair. And tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.